And
hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, boys and girls, for another special edition of the Michael Deacon Program. Joining me in a moment is Daniel Crystals, an independent researcher, historical analyst, and writer. Daniel is the host of Bob Busters on Rumble and Josh Who TV. Bob Busters cuts through this age of deception and delivers the most important thing of all, the truth. Now, without further ado, let's bring him right on in. And joining me right now is Daniel from Bob Busters, the podcast, not Bob Busters, like, you know, busting someone's balls, but ball. And yes, if you search for that, you will find his program there. And he is also the author of Priestcraft Beyond the Babylon, a great book, by the way. I had a chance to read a good portion of the book, and I do appreciate the jumbo-sized book, by the way. Yeah. It's easier to read.
Yeah, 14 fonts, nice. And then you get the color version, too. So the small amount of pictures that are in there, at least, are color.
Yeah, they're pretty nice. And, you know, there's a lot to cover here in this book. But before we do, I thought we can also talk about other things going on in the world, get to know you even better. Most of my audience seems to, you know, they seem to like you quite a bit, my friend.
Nice.
That's why you're back. That's why you're back. You know, they enjoyed you the first time, and they were wondering when you would be back. And I thought, you know what, let's bring them right on in again.
Cool.
Why the hell not? We don't play by any rules here, so let's do what we'd like to do, and the law shall be written, as they say.
There you go.
So, Daniel, by the way, when people bring you on, you know, you do all the, I'm sure you've done plenty of interviews, right?
Yeah, the last year and a half I have. I used to just be my own, like, presentations, or I almost like book reports on video, kind of, you know, finding things, and that way the resource is what I'm talking about, so there's no, it's not just me saying it, you know, so that kind of helps out as far as credibility, and then whatever resources or sources that that book had, I'll mention those too. But it kind of evolved into getting more people on. Started talking to this guy called The Fact Hunter, and he actually asked me to be on his show, and we had friendliness for a while, but things changed, and then I got Dr. Brian Artis on. And he's been on like over 40 times now, and that just kind of spiraled into his booker having more clients and sending them my way.
Nice.
And then me just finding other people and finding their books and then trying to contact them to get them on and stuff. So spiraled from there.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, do you ever find any of these shows kind of boring to be on after a while? Like, you know, you talk about the same thing over and over. Does it ever get too repetitive at times for you?
I don't think so. Like, I don't go on very many people's shows. I'm trying to change that now that I have the book out, just so more people know about the show. And
I think I think that's like burnout. That's probably what I'm looking for here.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you ever get burnt out by being on like a bunch of shows and doing the same talk over and over.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to that point
that
yet.
Point
so
yet, yeah.
It's kind of still fresh. I know that will happen at some point,
eventually.
Especially when I hear other people. That when I have other people on my show, I try to get them to talk about, you know, let's say your humanity, your personality. Let's talk about other things that kind of give people a different insight as to, instead of the script, you know what I mean? So let's talk a little bit about other stuff and get a more voluminous impression of the person. So that's where I get to have some fun on my show, because I get to, you know, have them branch out a little bit from what they're used to talking about.
Yeah, that's the best approach, in my opinion. I was going to say the breast approach. I guess I'm thinking about some low hangers there. I don't know. That's
right.
A joke, by the way, people. It's okay, you can laugh. But yeah, I guess that's where my mind was right now. I was just thinking, if you've done a bunch of these programs already and you kind of feel burned out at times. I know when I go on a show, sometimes it's like, you know, I'm being asked the same thing on every other show, and you know, I've even been on a bunch of shows, but it burns me out already just thinking about it.
Yeah, it's cool to have people that you know that you're on a friendly basis with when you're on their shows, like niche. Like, we can always keep it because we're just having a conversation. It's not stuffy,
right?
You know? So that's kind of nice when we're we keep in contact outside of just when we're on together. So that helps it out a little bit because it's, you know, we're just carrying on the conversation in public now instead of it being something like a very formalized meeting or whatever.
And of course, one of the things I wanted to ask you right here, since, you know, the book, your book, you talk a lot about William Cooper, and I wanted to talk about his demise with you, the infamous shootout. Your thoughts and opinions on the end game.
Well, that half the people, let me put it this way. Doyle, the guy who was allegedly closest to him and his, you know, assistant and whatever, I'm not sure how much I trust his role and position in it, because some of the parts of his stories don't really add up. Like, there was police the chief or whatever, the sheriffs were at his house that night too, trying to blockade people from coming to his house as well. I don't buy into that. And that's also his excuse for not being there when it happened. But I don't know. Yeah, I mean, the only person that's really told the story is Doyle. And he does mention something that I would have to 100% agree with. And that is, there's no possible way that Bill was the one that shot the other cop in the head, who didn't die, by the way. But just from the whole entire layout, and he goes through it step by step. And in the police report, they say that he shot him. I think they're covering up, because a lot of times these idiots go into places, ATF, FBI, they end up shooting each other because they're fucking idiots.
So well, that's true.
I think that's what they just did. I mean, the dead guy's not going to say anything, so let's blame it on that guy. You know,
a dead man doesn't say anything. He's dead,
right? Kind of hard to get a statement out of him.
Exactly. Yeah. So if any listeners out there are gonna, you know, do something bad, make sure you kill that person.
Right. Be thorough about it, for Christ's sake.
We're kidding, of course. No, we will take no legal action, but yes, kill that person. I don't know, you've been on many shows where someone's telling you that, by the way. You don't hear that often, do you?
That's why I like being here.
Yeah. It's a good show. It's a good family show.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great time here. And by the way, I wish we could be doing this live, my friend, but of course, this is pre-recorded and, you know, takes a little bit of the fun out of it, because you, when it's live, it's a little bit more wilder, you get phone calls, that sort of deal. But regardless, I mean, this, we're gonna have fun regardless here, no matter if we're live or not. But one of the things that I find frustrating is the fact that you can't really talk about COVID whatsoever to any extent without your YouTube channel being removed or you being demonetized or just terminated completely. And that's what happened with me just the previous night, when my guest went on some rant. Well, he went on many rants, by the way, about COVID. And, well, I mean, I could sort of kind of believe why it would happen, but, and why YouTube would do that. But, you know, he was saying that all kinds of people were going to die very, very soon because they took the jab. And, you know, YouTube does not like to hear that. They label it medical misinformation.
Oh, yeah. I had Dr. Peter Glidden, a 35-year naturopathic doctor, on talking about the possible connection between parasites and a lot of cancers, and I got that video taken down. I have had two full channels named Balls Busters deleted off of YouTube after something like, I think it was close to 13 or 14 strikes between the two, because they fall off after 90 days.
Right.
And it was all medical misinformation stuff.
That's what they get you on.
I've also, just to test it, and it happened, I got a strike for it. I took a video that was already on YouTube, didn't say a damn word, reposted it, and I got a strike for that one. I'm like, what's going on here?
Yes. You know, there's other people that are on YouTube and they talk about COVID all the time, like that Dr. Campbell gentleman, by the way. And, you know, he's fine. He has like a million subscribers there.
Is that the guy in the UK with short hair or bald head, possible?
So very, very short with glasses. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, if people don't question that, like, there's got to be something to how he's steering his audience to make that acceptable. You know, it's like there's people out there that they want because they know they control them or whatever. Or they're part of the organization, if you will, part of the brotherhood, if that they can say whatever they want. And that encourages more people to think that they can do it too, or comment. And it's like a big honeypot, because then they're like, we know what that guy's thinking. We know.
Right.
Yeah. It's like a threat assessment thing, you know, threat assessment.
It's super annoying. And I feel like this gentleman, you know, he was all about the vaccine and then he went against it for a while. And still, he remained untouched on YouTube. And I thought, well, isn't that strange?
He was all for the vaccine.
He was all for it for a while, and then he stopped being all for it, and then he went back to being all for it again. You know, he's flip-flopping, but his channel remains, and it seems like he's making plenty of income from his YouTube channel. Even has the plaque in the background there, but the gold little thing there.
That's a little obnoxious. Like,
it's really... It's really obnoxious. It's like, look, I'm talking about things that would get you removed.
Right. No double standard whatsoever.
Oh,
and
not at all.
Ask yourself, well, who are these people really affiliated with?
That's right. And I find it even more sad and questionable why YouTube would just do that sort of thing and then allow all kinds of sick videos to be on YouTube. There's all kinds of questionable things, even like a breastfeeding. You can see fully, you know, uncensored.
Now, you don't have children, right?
I don't.
Okay. So being that I have a small one, I'm subjected sometimes to the YouTube family channel.
Yeah.
There's so many
weird stuff there, right?
Weird, dark, occultish freaking themes in those shows, and they all play the same ones, like Hello Neighbor, the Baldy one. They're all about trying to kill children or putting them in cages and locking them up, and they have to try to escape jail. It's like, what the hell are we watching here?
Yeah, so you have to ask yourself, who is that for?
Right.
It's not really for children, is it?
Who is that? Who's that audience for? Is it for the kids or is it for some little pervert, you know?
That's right. And then you have these people that don't have any kids and they go to Disneyland and they're full-grown adults and they're hanging around at Disneyland.
Yeah.
There's groups of people that do that, by the way. There's actual groups, ladies and gentlemen, that go and frequent Disneyland and they don't have any children and they're fully grown.
Knowing what, you know, what I think most people at least assume or get the feeling for what Disney is all about, that's the fact that they're going there of all places, just kind of, again, for those who understand this stuff, it's like rubbing it in your face.
Right.
Like we can do this out in the open and nobody even gets it.
You know, I'm not a parent, but a lot of this stuff I just find sick.
Yeah. They're also like a lot of the ones that do have children, they're so well off and so materialistic that they're giving off really bad influences to children as well. And it's always about the unboxing of this toy or that toy or whatever else, or just their attitudes and how they treat adults and stuff like that. It's erosion of the family. They should call it the erosion of the YouTube, you know, of the family YouTube channels rather than YouTube family channels.
I agree. And, you know, I'm going to ask you a personal question here. I hope you don't mind, but...
7, probably.
What's that?
Never mind.
I was about to ask you how young were your kids when you introduced them to, you know, the internet, the tablet, the iPad, the booklet, as they call all these things.
That wasn't me.
It was the mom.
Yep. You know.
Early.
We don't do cable. I mean, we have a smart TV and we have the internet. So
I hear
it's on every once in a while, but I don't even look at the television set. I've got 2 in the house, 1 in the bedroom that I never turn on when I'm in there, 1 in the living room but I mean, we have the 2 computers here in this room.
Right.
And, you know, like if I was 100%, you know, regulating the situation, there would be no Roblox because there's a lot of messed up.
It's a lot of weird themes in there. Yeah.
Well, yeah, there would be no YouTube family crap or TikTok. Personally, TikTok is, I don't know what the hell the flicker rate is doing to my child's brain. And I don't know what else is being, you know, implemented in their subconscious, because I think attitudes towards adults in general and like the erosion of family happens at the technological level that we don't quite understand. But the occultists know just fine.
It's
the ones that jack around with MKUltra and psychedelics, they know what they're doing.
That's true. Have you ever experienced any psychedelics by any chance?
Oh, lots.
I mean, yeah, there's some good stuff out there, in my opinion.
I think it has to do with your moral fabric, too. You know, it's like if you've got... so here's the thing. I think they erode a wall. So if you're more susceptible to a darker thing influencing you, then that's what's going to happen.
Right.
If you are seeking for the sake of not being just high, but also to try to get a better understanding, you could still be misled for quite a long time. But I think eventually if you have some kind of character or some kind of something inside you, a spark or whatnot, that you'll understand something more than you would have ever have come across in any type of long meditation or any other new age shit. Maybe it's a shortcut. Maybe you shouldn't do it. I don't know. But like psilocybin, I've always, for the most part, have had really good experiences with. I've never had Amanita muscaria or anything like that, but I've had psilocybin. I've had acid a few times, but mostly psilocybin.
Psilocybin is great. I enjoy it myself, but I prefer acid, to be honest with you. I think it's a much cleaner sort of experience, and you could control it a lot easier.
And, you think so? That's more like the ergot?
I believe that's a lot stronger, in my opinion. It's just...
Oh, it's definitely stronger.
Yeah, the mushroom, the psilocybin mushroom is definitely a lot stronger if you eat a heavy dose. It's a lot harder to control that than I would say acid. I mean, acid you can control and you're not really... And a lot of people, they have a misconception. Yeah. They have a big misconception of what acid is. They think they're going to see like things appear and disappear. They think they're going to see a unicorn, and it's like you're not going to see any of that shit.
I don't think, and here's, you can tell me about what you think about this, because I'm always curious what other people think. I think we're tuned into like a certain dial
frequency.
Setting.
Yes, we are.
Then if you speed that up or slow it down, or if you take a psychedelic, it's not because it's not part of reality. It's more reality than you're used to processing. And it's a different channel, or you're stuck between two channels. So you're seeing the overlap of two different things, but not necessarily seeing with your eyes, like visuals, but more like, mentally,
you yes,
know, feeling it, right? And I think psilocybin is more mental than acid, because I've been to raves before where I didn't know it was going to end at 2 a.m. So I started peeking at 1 p.m. or 1 a.m. and it was time to leave. I was like, shit, gotta drive. But
yeah, you know,
that was out in Portland, Oregon. But
yes, don't drive when you're on acid, folks. Not good.
No,
be careful.
Everything is very, very exaggerated,
very
a little
wavy.
Hill, I'm like this, and
yes,
but I had they had like those. I don't know if it was sheets, small sheets, you know, pinned at just all the four corners on the walls in the acid / techno room. And when it started to hit, I could see that it was breathing.
Right,
and I didn't
understand.
Like, you look at it, it looks like, what the hell kind of decoration is that? And then when it happens, you're like, oh.
It makes sense now.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Everything makes sense when you're in that state of mind, in my opinion. If you're like myself, a creative mind, someone who likes to create, acid will be very beneficial for you. I'm not going to bullshit you or lie to you out there when you listen to this. But if you are mentally unstable and have issues in your life, I recommend you not doing anything.
Right.
Don't do any drugs. If you're already mentally unbalanced, I think there's no benefit for you at all.
Yeah. And I told you, I think maybe. Yeah. I think I messaged you on this when we were on Instagram that I haven't had anything to drink in over 8 years.
That's
because
right.
When my daughter was born, I just decided, let's not, you know, jeopardize my own stupidity into, you know, affecting my own family. And Rebecca also.
Well, when you say that, are you saying that in the realm that you yourself maybe had issues with alcohol in the past? That has
no,
it ever affected you?
I had issues
you?
With police officers. I didn't have issues with alcohol. Just everything that I've ever done has been very well documented.
I see. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So, I mean, did I like it? Yeah. I was when in my 20s, if there was anything besides hot sauce and beer in my fridge, I'd be surprised. Maybe a block of cheese. But I mean, it was just different varieties of beer. Like, I wasn't the type that...
So you were deep with the alcohol then? You were like, you know, drinking every weekend?
Drinking beer or anything.
I hear you. Okay.
No, but I enjoyed it. But I think I got it all on my system. I drink a lifetime's worth, and by the age of 36 or whatever. So
it's all about moderation.
And I didn't start drinking until 21, and my parents owned a bar. Well, 20.
Oh wow,
20.
That's pretty wild. I would expect you to drink a lot sooner if your parents owned a bar.
Yeah, we owned a restaurant. My parents owned an Italian restaurant and bar in upstate New York.
Oh my,
a really big bar. Yeah.
Very nice, very nice. And you haven't touched alcohol in many moons, you say.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I even am skeptical whether I have like a tincture when it's been extracted with alcohol. Like,
right.
I try not to take it. It's just a thing with me, because I tell me this is stupid. That's fine. But I have my own beliefs on this, and I'm not an ultra religious person, but I know that there's something out there. And when I found out that we were going to have a child, we had lost in a miscarriage one.
I see.
And so I made a pact. I said, I'm not going to, you know, healthy, happy child, and I'll give this up. It's not a big deal to me if I, you know, and so I did. And I've never gone back on it. I'm not going to jeopardize the demons and the gods by saying, oh, well, we're good now. She's born. So we might as well just keep doing. I was, no, I'm not going to do that.
Did you ask God for that?
Well, whoever.
Whoever's out there.
Right. I'm not, I don't have a very traditional belief set on that. I used to, I mean, I was born into a Roman Catholic, get your communion, get your confirmation family. Right. And then we went to the Christian churches and all that stuff. But a lot of what my book is about, I think you see that I'm kind of debunking the whole Old Testament, and I don't think they should be connected. And I think if there was a, and I'm not saying that there wasn't, don't get mad at me, but I, to all those people who might be listening to this, I'm not saying that there wasn't a J-Man. I'm just saying I think they put words in his mouth to kind of integrate those two books together, and I think one is the polar opposite of the other.
Right. The two of them don't really go together, if you ask me. And the New Testament, it's like saying, well, God made a mistake.
Yeah. Oops. They do that a lot. So say the thing with the Lord and Kabbalah, like the whole idea of like the sparks of, and the vessels cracking, and then, oops, we have mankind, big mistake. And then it's the chosen ones' duty to redeem the world by fucking killing everybody else except for the chosen ones and making way for the new Messiah of theirs. And that's where the Lord and Kabbalah is all about. That's where Zionism comes from. That's like, it was called Sabbatean Frankism up until it was called Zionism. And if you knew the practices of Jake and Frank, yeah, that's a pretty awful, disgusting thing. Incest. I'm not so upset about the whole orgy thing, but wife swapping, you know, drinking of blood, consuming of human flesh, all right. That stuff, and tormenting of children.
Zombie Jesus, as they call him.
Zombie Jesus, the original zombie.
Right.
Came back from the dead.
Came back from the dead. And yeah, but there's some weird stories in the Bible for sure.
And Tammuz, the story of Tammuz is like almost the same as the Jesus story. I think a lot of this stuff is Babylonian. Now, saying this again, this doesn't say that there wasn't a guy. I think they just took whatever they take whatever they can and graft it into whatever they want to manipulate you with. So words get put in people's mouths, terms of, and situations get changed. And Rosicrucians edited the goddamn King James Version. So I don't understand how people can just, why don't you listen to that person who talks to you, who's a cool dude, who tries to guide you into doing, you know, away from doing stupid things. And don't worry about the intermediary. Fuck the church. Fuck the, you have to learn this and you have to believe that. Or we're telling you, you're not going to someplace. Fuck
right. You. Yeah, that's, it's a little odd to me as well.
Am I allowed to swear here?
Yeah, you can say whatever you want.
All right, cool.
Yeah, you could cuss. It's fine. I just think it's very odd that some people want to go to a church and they love church. And I think, why? It's just, it's not a requirement.
Right. And when I started looking into this stuff, like, a lot of things have changed from, I mean, it was, I think, always a Babylonian book in the first place, the Old Testament. It was a Sumer Babylonian, just renaming things to mask it. And when I was reading that book, Masking the Whole by Michael W. Ford, I've kind of seen the parallels there even more. And the whole caduceus symbol of the medical industry, that is straight. I'm not gonna say anything, get this in trouble, but that is straight out of, I think it's, I'm not going to pronounce it right, but I have it in the notes. But
you can get us in trouble. It's okay.
It's one of the gods of ancient Sumer, and it represents utilizing venom, which is kind of interesting if you talk to Dr. Artis, and poisoning, and it's like the plague, the god of plagues and things like that. So it's a symbol used on purpose. I think it's Nigashida is who I'm thinking of, the serpent god, guardian of demons. Or it could be also, yeah, it's Nigashida, I'm pretty sure. So they reused the old Babylonian stuff in modern day. So what has changed? And that's why Priestcraft Beyond Babylon kind of explains there's no broken chain between then and now. And whatever manifestations they've come to throughout the day, it's just new masks for the same ancient stuff.
Correct.
You know,
Christianity was pretty much based off of the Egyptian mythos, basically.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And, you know, also even going beyond that, I think some of the Egyptian stuff was coming from the Akkadian and Assyrian influences too.
Correct.
That were in Babylon at the time.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And another random question that I like to ask everyone when I talk to them, and I'll ask you the same question. Do you consider yourself a good person?
Yes.
You do?
Yes. For the most part, yeah. I don't ever try to do harm to others.
I don't consider myself a good person, and I don't consider myself a bad person. I feel like I've done a lot of good, and I've done a lot of bad.
Okay, and, in that respect, okay, so let me just say this. I have regrets, because, you know, people don't live forever.
Right.
Wishing that I was, you know, spent more time and was in the right place at the right time to help family members that have passed. Yeah, I don't feel like a good person for that, and that does bother me. But what I try to do is to change and fix all that with my family here, my daughter and stuff like that. So I think I'm on the right path of doing the right thing, is what I guess I meant to say by that.
Right.
Because I think saying that you're a good person is like kind of, I get what you're saying there. It's kind of like it's presumptuous, maybe a little obnoxious. I get it.
Well, I mean, if that's how you feel, then that's how you feel. You know, I'm not trying to make you feel any way about that. It's just a question I like to ask a lot of people and see what they think of themselves in that regard. And just like you, you know, I've done a lot of good things, a lot of bad things, regret some things in life. And all we could do is try to be a better version of ourselves the next time around.
Yeah. And right. The next time around, for sure. Because it seems like we're stuck.
Yeah. We're kind of stuck in this realm here. Yes. And, you know, all these sort of things run through my mind when I'm like sick or injured and I'm laying in bed. I start thinking about my life and everyone that I'm tied to in this world. And I think about how I've done good for certain people and I wrong certain people. And I just try to remain as balanced as I can.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because selfishness is one of those things that I don't even know if people recognize when they're being so, but it's like a developmental thing that happens throughout life. And if you're not screwing it up with additional substances and stuff like that, you may actually mature out of it, I think. But when you look back at it, it's like the people who raise you, the time when you're getting the most love or whatever, if that's your situation in life, not every family is like that, but
right.
That's the time where you're not the best. You're not at your best, because it hasn't matured to that time yet to where you would start to understand, you know, what selfishness truly looks like. So it's like when I had my grandmother pass away on me in 2006 because of medical malpractice,
mm-hmm.
It made me think, like, you know, I understand what the value of money is now. And she used to be working and give me a $10 row of quarters to go play at the arcades at the mall. And like, or I would always ask for something and get it. And like, what the hell did I do that for? My grandmother was having a hard time as it was. You know, it's things like that.
Yeah,
that
you
really
just didn't
bothered.
Know at the time. Until
and I
later.
Wonder if that's an excuse. You know?
No, I don't think it's an excuse. I just think certain things take a while to develop before you come to that realization about X, Y, and Z. And it's always with time these things come. And, you know, you start questioning your own mentality and your own purpose in this world as well.
Yeah, and $10 back then, people were making $4.50 an hour. You know what I mean? It's not like now we're fucking California. They're making everybody who works in fast food $20 an hour.
$20
April.
An hour, yeah. So your menu prices are up astronomically, and it's a shame, really. You know, I bought breakfast for my dad and myself at a Jack in the Box maybe a couple weeks ago, and that was like $20-some.
Yeah. You got off light. I took my stepson and myself.
Well, actually, let me revert that. Actually, it wasn't 20. It was about $40.
Yeah. Okay. Now we're close.
Yeah, it was 40 because it was a combo.
Yeah.
For one of those ultimate breakfast jacks things, you know, and that shit was $40.
That's a dinner at a nice restaurant back in the day.
I don't know
if that day exists anymore.
I know that was like back in like, I think early, well, I should say about late 90s, early 2000s, there was a gentleman by the name of Tom Likas. And
yes.
He used to say, don't ever go on a date that's going to cost more than $40. That's long gone.
McDonald's it is.
Yeah, I mean.
First impression.
Shit, man. I mean, everything's going to cost you $40 nowadays. Probably even higher, obviously. But fast food, that's $40.
Yeah,
fast food,
nuts.
By the way. Food that will definitely kill you and give you cancer for $40.
If I do anything like that, I try to go to finding good Chinese food is the first obstacle. And then,
that's true.
You know, getting there for the lunch menu time where it's a little bit cheaper.
Yeah, but
like General Tso chicken, if it's good, it's like the best thing on the earth.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But Yeah, a lot of these things, you know, we don't really think about until a little later in life. And, you know, I thank the acid as well for helping me get through a lot of these things, a lot of these tough times in my life. It's really helped me tremendously mentally, I would say. And, you know, I feel that a lot of veterans should be on the acid instead of the ketamine that they want to give these boys. I think they need to give them shrooms or acid, and that will help a lot of these gentlemen who come back from combat with a lot of these mental issues. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of veterans out there, and a lot of them, it's hard for them. You know, they fall back on alcohol and all this other stuff. And I've talked to many of them.
Because of the pain, because a lot of them are injured, all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I hate to see it, you know, because I know so many people that are veterans, and a lot of veterans love this program. And I hate to see them like that. You know, I wish we could give them all acid. As crazy as that sounds. But I mean, I'm telling you, it would definitely help these people that are suffering tremendously on the inside.
Absolutely. I was a U.S. Coast Guard, not combat, obviously, but I was active duty during the World Trade Center attacks, but mm-hmm. I wasn't anywhere near it. I was in Cabo San Lucas. But we got called back on the boat, and I was a message traffic handler, so I got to see like all the Z-Flash reports and stuff like that, being a TC. But what I had discovered, because when I decided to quit, you know, I started taking Kratom. And I noticed that there was it was the easiest thing to do is to just break the habit because of the Kratom. Because it was routine stuff, the alcohol. It wasn't even like, I didn't even enjoy it for like 3 years before I did it. I used to be disgusted with myself if I did drink. I just couldn't stand anything about it, the way I felt health-wise, the lack of energy the next day. I just hated it. So, and I wasn't enjoying my conversations out in public with people. Shit, I couldn't even afford it now the way that...
Right, I know, now it's all expensive. And by the way, Daniel,
I started selling Kratom.
You started selling Kratom.
Yeah, I called it Returning Soldier Kratom Connection, and I was selling it on, you know, I think back then I think you could do it over Craigslist or whatever, and I would just meet up with people. But the purpose was, I found so much benefit from it for mood and stuff like that. That, you know, 21 or 22 veterans commit suicide a day. If they had Kratom, if they had what you had as well. Forget even ecstasy.
That probably helped
too.
Had
that, they might not kill themselves.
I believe so. And I've known many veterans who, you know, their colleagues have definitely ended their own lives after some of the experiences they've gone through. And again, I feel terrible about that. And for those who don't know, what can you explain a little bit about Kratom and just some of its effects?
Yeah. So it comes from Malaysia, Indonesia. And apparently it's the most potent when it's grown out of its natural soil. And that could just be from, you know, ours being depleted from over harvesting and stuff like that. I don't know what the real reason is, but when you get it from there, it's usually best. And Meng Da is the green leaf form. It's supposed to be the best. I think it's probably the strongest but I like the red as well at times because it's more calming. And, it actually makes you more creative, more talkative. Just in a better mood. And if minor aches and pains of that, the idea that I'm just getting old and feeling old,
right?
Getting out of bed is a lot easier, things like that. So it's very helpful. It's very beneficial to me personally. And I've been taking it, like I said, for almost a decade now. Before, when I first took it, it was like as a sample packet that came with something else that I bought. And I don't know if it was enough or if the capsule didn't melt because it was in a capsule form. I take the powder straight in water now, so it doesn't have to dissolve anything. And I felt like nothing happened, so I never went back to it until like a couple of years later when I found the powder form and I was like, what the hell? And I was like, wow. So it does have an opiate type of effect to it. It goes to the same direction without, but from a different path. So it's not like pressing the opiate button down until it gets stuck. And I think that's what happens with people who do opiates themselves, is whatever in your brain that, you know, you can push that button so many times until the spring is kind of dead. And then you don't get the feeling anymore until you up the dose and then you kill yourself. Right.
Right.
So that doesn't happen with Kratom. And I think that's another reason why it's beneficial to, you know, people with PTSD, if you want to call it a disorder or PTS, because it's not really a disorder. Shit happened. Trauma sucks and it should affect you. Then I think that would, just for the mood enhancement version, you know, variety of it, plus getting people off of other things that are killing them, because opiates feel good, you know. And if you're taking the ones that the doctors are handing you, and the VA doesn't even let you have good stuff anymore. So they're screwing the soldiers over majorly there. Then the alternative that's from nature, that's actually in the family of the coffee plant of all things. I think that would be a better choice than the pharmaceutical version of it.
Right.
And definitely you won't have the desire to drink or anything else like that either. You don't need it. You don't feel that impulse of wanting something that you don't have, you know?
Understood. For a while there, I know John Lear was taking Kratom, and I, you know, he's been on this program numerous times, but one of the last times I talked to him, he was in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And I remember he was, I think that was probably a few months before he even died.
Oh, wow.
So that was terrible. And I know Bill Cooper thought he was a CIA shill, by the way.
Did he? I don't know. I don't know who John Lear is, honestly. I mean, I've heard the name. The jet guy? Like, I don't even know.
Well, yeah, his dad actually created the Lear jet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But John Lear, he was very much, he was a pilot for the feds at one time, obviously. Some say he was involved with cocaine trafficking, some would say. But those are just rumors, and, you know.
Oh, there you go.
I don't know. I don't know if I believe that part, but he definitely worked for the feds at one time. I'm pretty sure about that part, though.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and the affiliation there is like, well, a lot of these people say, oh, I'm an ex this or a former that. I'm like, if you know these organizations and how they act, there's no such thing as former shit. You know, know their secrets.
Yeah,
they're
there's no former. Yeah, there's no former there. They all are still connected by some means.
Reassigned to a different duty, which is, hey, propaganda. You know,
lots
that's
of
a retirement for Muslim is propaganda. I'm a good guy now.
He's a good guy, as they say.
Yeah.
And one of the other things I wanted to mention here was I'm sure you saw all the tunnels from the unorthodox Jews in New York.
The unorthodox Jews.
Don't you find that unusual that story was swept under the rug after about 2 days?
Yeah. And did you notice that Stu Peters and Brother Nathaniel got together to post their own propaganda when they had their little interview there? I actually
Wait a minute. Who's Brother Nathaniel?
He's the bushy-haired, bushy-beard guy with the glasses and the hat with the... He's supposedly a converso, or a Murano, if you will, who converted to Christianity, which I would probably say more like a Jesuit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he sings or rhymes like he's Dr. Juice instead of Dr. Seuss.
Oh, wait, yeah, I've seen this gentleman before, now that I looked at a photograph of this. Nathaniel Kapner.
Yes, that guy. So he's been on, first setup, because this is all to work on the people, right? He goes on Alex Jones, and Alex Jones talks over him a bunch of times and tries to shut down what Brother Nathaniel's saying. And I don't like Alex Jones, and I don't think he's ever telling the truth. And
his whole tune changed, by the way. Because I used to really like him from the early 2000s up until about 2010.
That's he ran out of shit to steal from Bill Cooper.
Really,
Bill Cooper stopped making shit.
He really changed, though. I don't know what happened to him. He, you know, the Alex Jones we have today is not the Alex Jones of the past, because the one that I remembered from the past was really against a lot of the stuff he's doing today. Meaning, you know, he's siding with a sitting president at that time, and at one time, Alex hated the left and the right, and that's why I loved him so much. Because he didn't like any.
Right?
Yeah, he evolved. I call him the ultimate opportunist, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, you never know who. It's like, well, what controls your fate when you're moving up the ladder and being successful? Whoever buys out whatever now has their own set of rules.
Yeah.
If you're not already just part of the system to where the first stage of your development was to gain everybody's trust, and now let's steer him into the dirt. You know. So I mean, it could just be something like that where it was. An evolutionary process. First, we gain and garner the respect and trust of people, and then we lead them off a cliff like a Pied Piper of the apocalypse. So it could be that. It could just be the people who control the money and his availability to earn it, if he's not just part of the thing itself, make him change his tune, and he willfully does so. I mean, you get an older people. I mean, if you're saying the wrong thing in a pop and you're popular. About the wrong people, what about the right people? Your family could be in danger, you know?
That's
especially
right.
Especially if they're connected to the Mossad. So
That's true. And as you know, and everyone else knows out there listening to this, the media has always been controlled.
Yes.
We've known that already. We've known that through Operation Mockingbird. We know that the news is controlled by the feds. We know that they control Disney, ABC, and so forth and so forth. We already know about all the journalists that were in the back pockets
of our friends at the CIA.
Back in the 1950s is when it all really came full front, with the CIA spending millions and millions on corporate media to control the agenda. And this, a lot of people think, well, you know, that was way back in the day. It doesn't go on today. It's, you know, it's in the past. Bullshit. I mean, this still goes on all the time. It's happening right now in real time.
Right. And when that time frame that you put in, the 50s or the 60s, that was right after the development of cybernetics with the Macy Foundation and Rockefeller, and then right into the MKUltra. So they were perfecting their methods for mass mind control and utilizing the media to do that. But I would say that media journalists in general, they've been controlled ever since Lincoln. Didn't he put 40,000 of them in prison or locked away to where no one ever found him again during the suspension of habeas corpus? So we don't know what the hell happened to most of them.
Oh, yes. Good point.
You know, yeah. So, I mean, good journalists learned what happened to good journalists when you tell the truth, forever changing the industry itself from then on.
Exactly. So, with all that said, did Alex Jones do this to his career because it'd be beneficial and he would profit off of this move? I would say absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean,
the commercialization has always been there. Like, he's always sold a million trillion products, and he's done so in fear-mongering ways. Like, the world's going to end in Y2K. The world's going to end in the Mayan calendar. And then, you know, Stu Peters is just a repeat of that. But now they're playing that game where first Brother Nathaniel goes on Alex Jones and everybody. And even I was like, what the hell? I don't ask the question if you don't want him to answer. And then he goes on to Stu Peters, and they put on this whole display about the tunnels. Mm-hmm. Being a nothing burger is what Dr. Juice, J-E-W-S-E, you know.
Oh, really? He was saying it's nothing.
Yeah. He said, I studied with the Chabad in a whole different city called, you know, Philadelphia. And he said, for 3 years. So the Chabad, that's Kabbalistic, right? That's the Lurian Kabbalah. That's where Sabbatine Frankism comes from. That's where the idea of Zionist developed. And he's saying that, A, back in 1913, there was no Zionist movement. Bullshit. It was called something else back then. It wasn't anything that has to do with the evangelical churches that came out of the Moravian Plymouth or Exclusive Brethren, which, by the way, Aleister Crowley's parents were members of the Exclusive Brethren, the whole John Darby thing, the Scofield Bible, all that stuff was Sabbateanism or Frankism, if you will. So all that came about. Then you have the Jesuit element of that. Which I believe, if we're going to try to identify, if we're going to make that attempt to speculate, that I think there's a Jesuit hand in what's going on with the whole Stu Peters and Brother Nathaniel conversation. Because right in the very beginning, Stu Peters criticizes the evangelical Zionist Protestants, is the word he uses. Who's the biggest enemy, the nemesis of the Jesuits through the Counter-Reformation War? The Lutherans and the Protestants, right? So I found that kind of interesting that they start off like that before he even brings Brother Nathaniel on. And then the whole thing about the nothing burger. So when he was 20, it was 50 years ago. Brother Nathaniel's 73 right now. He said he studied with him for 3 years and he says the date or whatever. So he's basing his judgment on what's going on with the tunnels in a different state off of his experience that he had 50 years ago. And he's saying, oh, yeah, don't worry. It's, you know, I don't care. He even said, I don't care if they're what they're pulling out of there. I was like, okay, so if they're throwing little, you know, rotted baby body parts over their shoulder as they're fixing the tunnel, no big deal because it's just a bathhouse. Because the Jew said so. So it must be true, right? You know, the resident golden Jew said so. So it must be true. And I'm not saying that. I'm not trying to say that about everybody. I'm just saying if you're a Kabbalist, if you're a Lutheran Kabbalist, if you're mixed up with the Jesuits or the Frankists, and you're telling me a story, I know it has to be, by definition, a misdirection, because that's what they...
that's what they do with each other. They deflect and all help each other. And it's no surprise that Israel has become, I should say. It's always been a safe haven for pedophiles.
And it's also been what created by the Rothschild banking, right? That's where the Balfour Declaration went to. So why would we think that that would be anything but a terrorist state? Because what did they do to the rest of the world? They terrorized them and put them into debt. And then they, you know, basically own the country because you have to do what they say because you're indebted to them.
Just remember the law of return, by the way, that's what it's called. For any Jewish person anywhere on this great planet we live on, they can become a citizen in Israel, and their spouse and their kids and their grandchildren, anyone who's a Jew can go back
from their mother's side, right? Because you can even be a halfie as long as it's on your mother's side that they trace a lineage, correct?
I believe something of that sort, yes. Yeah. And this was put into place, I think, sometime maybe in the 50s, I would have to say. I'm guessing here. I think it might have been the last I remembered. But either way, the fact that even exists, it should make everyone sort of a little bit suspicious, I would say.
Right. How can you have dual? I mean, especially when in politics and State Department, all that, you're talking about 85% of the people running our quote unquote country, because we know it's not run by them at all.
You pledge allegiance to Israel before you go on board. And as you said, you got to be down with it or else you don't get elected.
Right. And Israel is just the what do you call it, the material manifestation of the elusive they, quote unquote, they of the Rothschild banking system, which I believe still, and I'm going to say this to reiterate in case people don't watch my show that are listening to this right now, the Roman Catholic Empire never left. They just learned to control people and countries by proxy through debt. And that's why they utilize people like the Rothschilds, because they're like the property managers for the world estate that the papal bulls of these past popes have already claimed. They claimed your soul. They claimed the earth and everything on top of it. It's theirs. And there's never been anything that disputed that. When everything supposedly ended around the 1800s, and there were still people saying that they were electors to the Holy Roman Empire as far back as the 1800s. And then Franz II became Franz I of Austria. The Leopold Society grew from Austria. It was the new stronghold of the Jesuits because they were just reinstated in 1814. And they started flooding America to take us down. It's a slow process, but they do the infiltration part first. And just like Frankists, they do the same thing. They wear the mask of every other religion, but internally with one another, they are Frankists, no matter what else they're portraying on the outside. Evangelical Christian, you know, Catholic, Roman Catholic, whatever it is. And that all came about because of the meeting. People missed the third man in the room again. Jacob Frank was there with Weishaupt and Meyer Amschel Rothschild, and Meyer Amschel Rothschild converted to Frankism, and now we have Zionism, which is goddamn same thing.
That's right. And by the way, we don't hate the Jews, by the way.
No.
We don't. I don't want anyone out there, because I do have some Jewish listeners out there, and they have a sense of humor. They know. Yeah. I mean, I grew up with some Jews as well. I mean, you know, I still have friends that are Jewish, and you know, a lot of them don't care about a lot of this shit.
There's non Hasidic out there. Yeah,
the Hasidic Judaism. You know, they don't care about any of that. That really means nothing to them.
Some of the Hasidism, or whatever you want to, however you pronounce that or say it, there is some Sabbatean influence into that, but not all of it. It all depends on who corrupted what, because they like to infiltrate things. So depending on, this is the thing that sucks, is that the people who are the corrupt ones are the ones that usually speak on behalf of everyone else.
Correct.
So they demonize and give bad name to, and that's on purpose. And it's like, you can't, who do you trust? Because it's like asking a Freemason to tell you something about their order. They're obligated to tell you something that's not correct. It might be a lot of truth in it, but eventually the outcome is going to be, I know less than I knew when I first started listening, you know?
Yeah. I agree with you. And I could say the same thing about all religions, by the way. I feel like a lot of them is just man's interpretation, not exactly the message or word from God even.
Right. And I do, like, I like going back to that, that's why it's, when people say, are you this or that, I'm like, well, the assumption and the concept people have is that it has something to do with the book, which I won't even look at. But I know that there's a God, you know, at least I think there's something going on. There's something, I freaking grant, whatever it is, right?
Right. And that's why I say, I feel like you don't need to go to church. You don't need to join any kind of group at all. You can discover God, Jesus, whatever you want to call him, inside yourself. I believe that part, though, in the Bible. I feel gnosis. Like it comes and from think, inside.
Yeah, and gnosis, not being Gnostic, because Gnostic's a shit word that people who are anti early Christians,
yeah,
the Nicene Orthodoxy, made up years and years later. But gnosis, the knowing, instead of, you want faith, do you want to believe, or do you want to know? And I think psilocybin and things like that help people get to know. They just have to be aware that when you take down a wall, that anything can come in. You just got to be careful. You know what I mean? So it's just, and what are you going to be more lenient towards? If you're a friggin' mental psychopath or whatever, then you're going to do shitty things. If you're a sociopath that doesn't have any empathy, it's not going to enhance your empathy. It's going to make you into more of an asshole.
You know? Oh, yeah. And I've seen it happen. Oh, I've seen it happen to very, very religious people. For instance, you know, I've seen a man get married after their wife dies, maybe a month after she dies, and they were hardcore religious. And I think, oh, were you now?
Yeah, where's the love?
Yeah, right? I don't think you were religious. I think you worship the devil, I think.
For sure.
If,
absolutely.
If there is such a thing, which I, you know, sometimes even I question if there is God or Satan. I sometimes I'm a little bit hesitant to what to believe.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of times, you know, probably you as well as I, use concepts that people understand so they can visualize and kind of put a value to it. Yeah. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what it is.
These are still man's interpretation and man's words. So, and you know how man is.
And there's a lot of metaphysics involved that maybe we're not ever supposed to know the actual thing, because then that kind of takes the mystery out of it, for one, but it also kind of takes the mysticism out of it, which is kind of essential for its existence in the first place, like the archetypes or whatever. And when reading the Sumerian and the Babylonian mm-hmm. stuff, you have the demons and you have what essentially could be considered archons. I mean, these are coming from Babylon. That's pretty old. I mean, I'm sure there was reset back then too, because apparently there was a flood at that point, and who knows if that was created or if it was natural. Who the hell knows?
We don't know. And I'm glad you said that, because, you know, the Pentagon was saying, you know, the boys out there, they were talking about aliens and what these things are. And they're saying maybe these things are interdimensional. They're not really crafts of sorts, that these are organic forms, they're saying. A lot of stuff that's been going out there, I'm sure you've been reading yourself. In
yeah,
terms of all the UFO stuff going on right now. And yeah, a lot of them are saying these things are demonic. And I definitely wanted your opinion on that.
So we don't have a whole lot of information as to what happens under the ocean, right? And or underground with all these, speaking of tunnels, and the ones that they were drilling for all that time. That Gothard Tunnel is just the public one, right? With the strange ritual. But there's been a lot of videos in ever since like 2010, I think, of that loud humming that people would record. And when you listen to the Gothard Tunnel drilling, it sounds exactly the same. So through states in this country, they're expanding something that's down there. Is it connecting to something ancient? I don't know, but we don't know what's underneath us. There's some books that Freemasons or the like have written about it, like Etta Droppa and the Stormy God or whatever it is, that kind of tell you something, but it's just very symbolic and really tough for people to get a straight answer from. But there's the potential of that. I think Robert Sepper goes over a lot of this stuff too, with Etta Droppa and the bioluminescent plants and stuff like that, and how there's like an actual sun and all that sort of stuff or whatever. But they could just be interdimensional, or like you said, they could be interdimensional, or they could just be inner, as in under the ground. And
that's
a lot of
true.
These old Sumerian things, they talk about things coming out of the ocean to teach man, like Oannes and his equivalent. It's always these characters, and some of them have the head of a fish. And
right,
the head of a fish. That's Oannes. That sounds like a freaking scuba diver to me. Because you pull up the goggles, and then there's your face, right? So there's a lot of strangeness that goes on there, and it makes you wonder, okay, these people might have been taller. It's like, hey, you know what? There's a cataclysm coming. We don't want these people to try to get into our tunnels. So can we make them smaller this time? It's like, look who you're asking. I'm the genetics manipulating master. I got you. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden everybody's shorter. You know, it's like,
right.
So that way we can dominate.
And then think about our human origins as well. You know, we have a common ancestor with apes and stuff. And if you look,
I don't know about all that.
Well, that's what they say.
Right.
I mean, that's what they say about how we came to be, that we were genetically modified and all this stuff. But, you know, we all also have a Marine origin as well. You know, so that's why I'm saying I definitely think we did come from the sea. I feel like Atlantis was very real as well.
Have you noticed like a lot of the stories that talk about like these crafts or whatever? They have the ability to like kind of push water out of the way to go underwater.
Correct.
In the oceans, and then they shoot back up, and then like, you know, the stop starts without any inertia or whatever, right?
That's right. And you've been hearing about stories about this for a long time, about crafts jumping out of the water.
They're probably terrestrial. They're probably just people who were able to survive thousands upon thousands of years of cataclysms because they were wise enough to get underground when they happened, or they caused them themselves to create a reset to wipe the slate clean to start all over again. Mm-hmm. And that's why they would come out of the ocean to teach people again, because up to a point, they're kind of just, we're just the livestock until it's time to get rid of the livestock because they're getting a little noisy, you know?
That's right. I don't know. And the flood myth, it occurs in all cultures, which is pretty wild, my friend.
11,500 years ago, give or take, and then 6,500 years ago. So it's like cyclical. They get to a point, they're like, all right, let's wipe it out.
It's pretty scary, right?
Something happens.
Something does happen, yes. It's all interesting, in my opinion. And it makes you wonder when the next cycle is coming.
Right. And there's a book called The Adam and Eve Story by Chan Thomas. And apparently it was CIA classified since 1965. But in 2013, I believe actually it was 6/24, 2013 was the date that they, quote unquote, released it with partial declassification. There's like 57 pages. I read it on my elliptical 2 days ago, and it talks about a cataclysm event in California, which seems like they're talking about modern times.
Oh no.
And then they say the Adam and Eve story after that. So it's like, okay, this has happened before, it's gonna happen again. And the Adam and Eve story is like symbolic of a new beginning because of the cataclysm. So it's, and then it goes into, you know, different folklore, the story of Solon from, you know, the Plato writings and stuff like that. And kind of does a comparative analysis of all these stories that we've heard in the past about past cataclysms and rebuilding. And so basically resets.
Yeah, I think there's something to it, my friend. And it sucks that our human origins are so suppressed.
Oh, yeah. All by design, I'm sure.
It really bugs the hell out of me that I don't know.
Do you know who Howdy McCaskey is?
Do I?
Yeah, I'm asking.
I'm wondering. I'm like, do I know who that is?
He's on YouTube. He's written books. He's been on Freeman TV a lot. I like Freeman, so I listen to him sometimes.
I don't think I do. I don't think I'm familiar with him.
So he talks about Gnosis and Gnosticism and all this stuff. I just call them really Christians. That's one thing I like to get out of the way. But they have that demiurge type of philosophy, which I think there's a ton of valid information there to be and a lot of things to consider, because maybe the Abrahamic religions were created as a control mechanism by the demiurge. But anyway, that's aside.
That could also be true, though, that these things were just made for social control.
Yeah. And then when you need to adjust it a little bit to catch the other people back, you know, it's like another rope to bring them right back to the center. And dragging right back in, he just make a couple adjustments. Well, this guy was a different type of messiah, and this guy is going to be more accessible to these people, and then that'll rope them in, you know. Oh, and let's make a Muhammad, so we have somebody to be a bad guy.
That's true. And the fact that you pay money to these mega churches should really make you think twice, really.
So what Howdy said, I didn't mean to cut you off, but
that's okay.
He said, if this was supposed to be a place where you learn, and that you're trying to, you know, make yourself better and better, because we had talked about this earlier. Why would you lose your memory? This wasn't a trap, because you have to spend and waste all that time in this next life trying to relearn all that stuff again. And honestly, and now I'm gonna put my own personal story in this. When I was 14, just riding my bike up my road in my small ass town, I knew that one day I would have a daughter. And if I wasn't a memory from a different life, how did I know that was going to happen? I never had any question that I was going to have anything but my daughter.
Interesting. That was already in your head.
Already in my head.
Whoa.
So that's why it's very important to me to make sure that I can be the best protector, whatever, teacher, guiding, loving person that I can, because I don't think this is the first time something awful may have happened to my family or the world. And then my question to you is, do you think you come back into the same timeline? Because who the hell knows what the fucking rules are? Or do you think you advance into the history every time you get
That's a good question. I mean, it sounds like you're telling me that you believe in reincarnation here, and you have had past lives.
Kind of stuck cycle, yeah. Like, you know, that whole idea of walk toward the light is like, just like walking towards an angler fish's light, he fucking eats you. You go right back to where you started.
True. They say don't walk into the light. That's what they say.
Yeah, that's what the other people say, but usually it's, you know, the guiding light.
That is crazy. Yeah, you could be onto something here. But yeah, a lot of people have said that. I've heard a lot of conversations about the whole cycle, and I don't know, my friend. It is interesting, though. Maybe we have had past lives. I don't know for sure, but there are some cases that you hear of things happening and someone having knowledge of something that they didn't know nothing about. And then all of a sudden they're like experts in it. And then they have all these dreams and shit. And they're like, oh, I was so-and-so in 1839.
See, I can never be that specific about anything. That's why some of those stories I have a little question about. But there are children who found their house where they used to live where they were killed at.
Yeah, I've seen stories like
about
that.
It. They could teach them what they could show people in this time where their own body was buried. It was pretty messed up.
Yeah, when kids have those stories of they have these past life memories, that is freaky as shit, in my opinion.
Right. Like, what is that all about if there's nothing to it, right?
Yeah, it really just makes you wonder.
Have you ever had something happen, like you experienced something or you watched something or something triggered something where your emotional response is not equal to what you should be, you know, you're a third party, uninvolved witness of whatever you're seeing or hearing.
It makes you emotional almost.
It makes you super emotional. Yeah. Like, what is that all about?
That's happened to me a couple of times. You know, there's been some places I've been with.
Strikes a nerve, but you don't know why.
Yeah. And also, there's been some places I've been with a company, and I feel like I've been there before. Like, it feels almost too familiar.
I'm going to say something about that because there's something that I don't agree with that I heard from somebody recently. They said that if you feel a sense of deja vu, it's because you're making the same mistakes over again. I'm like, how is that true? Or that you're following the same path. Like, there's nothing that's 100% negative or wrong about a person's, you know, process that you would have to reject it completely for it to be completely different than last. That doesn't make any sense. You breathe every day. You know what I mean? It's like, that doesn't make any sense that you would recognize certain things through deja vu or whatever, or get that sensation. So that to me, I don't know why that person would have said that, but it just to me didn't make it a lot of sense because they might just be clues that you're on the right track.
Right.
Or that you're going to one day, like,
I didn't feel negative about it, that experience, but that's kind of weird that they did though.
Oh, they did. Yeah. Right. They did. So have you ever, and let me ask this question. I gotta try to get to the, son of a bitch. I lost it. Never mind.
It'll come back.
There's something into that, yeah.
It'll come back in a few moments. It always happens that way. You forget something, but then 5 minutes or 2 minutes goes by, and then you're back in the game. Mm-hmm. But yes, we were talking about past life memories. And yeah, there's a lot of people out there that think they were so-and-so in a so-and-so year, and then they go and talk to a psychic or a medium or something, and then they start telling them more and more about this.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what it, so have you ever, so going back to the whole, that sensation or feeling like you were there.
You've been there before. Yeah. Like there was a place in Santa, Barbara that I visited. It was a mansion. I was at this mansion in Santa Barbara up in the hills, a very expensive, lucrative place. And I was in this mansion and, you know, I'm walking around this old ass mansion and I'm just getting all these weird sensations and feelings. And that was a haunted mansion, by the way. I have a lot of photos and stories about that mansion, but
that's cool.
But I was in the courtyard, I was in the backyard, I was in the entertainment room they had there, and with a nice big pool table. But everything felt really familiar, going up and down these nice stairs, and I don't know, I had all these weird sort of dreams even.
I wonder if energy points, like ley lines or whatever, have something to do with that familiarity, because it might just be a sensitive area, a thinner part of our fabric of reality where we understand the source, our source, where we come from, a little bit better. And maybe that's where the familiarity comes from, like being home or something like that.
Are an antenna, and definitely wherever we are in our location, we could definitely receive weird signals. And that's probably what I was experiencing.
Yeah. And man, I haven't gone to Sedona yet.
We're all satellites in the sky, my friend. That's the way I see it.
For sure. I mean, there's so much to go along with the energetics of the body and all that other stuff too. And there's so much to discuss and to think and to wonder. And then I just have to go back to the whole idea, like if this was supposed to be a learning process or a stepping stone to somewhere else, again, you have to also assume that you're coming back in the first place for this to make any sense what I'm saying.
This is really screwed up if that's the case.
Right. And what the hell does that mean? And well,
yeah. And then you wonder, well, then what's the point of life then?
And that makes you wonder if this really is a demiurge prison. And that there's more to what the early Christians were beaten down and murdered for thinking about when it comes to like the seven layers of not the burrito, but of like heaven and like the firmament and all that stuff. Like the All Father is way up here, doesn't really interact with us, but different layers do. And like, you know, you have like the Sophia and the Logos, and then you have the Demiurge. And then he was granted the ability to make his own spot.
That's but, right.
He doesn't want anybody to leave, you know, who knows?
That's right. And if you go back and look at scripture, you know, they didn't want us to idolize anyone. No other deity other than what they're talking about in the Bible there.
Right.
They talk about past heroes and shit. And,
isn't that kind of weird?
It's like, weird.
Why
because,
God,
yeah,
be jealous?
Why would you be jealous for of these other deities? And, you know, it's a big no-no in the Bible to sort of go the other path with these other folks out there. You know, all these mythos and stories of what the Sumerians believed in and so forth and so forth. It's like you're telling me they're bad, they're wrong, and it makes me scratch my head and say, well, why?
If you were the creator of everything, any sense of love or loyalty would really go back to you in the first place, right? Because you're the creator of that.
You're the creator.
Thing.
You're the one who made those people, right? So right. Why are you upset for?
And why would a god who's, if they're supposed to be the supreme god and not just a demiurge, have effed up so much that he needs you to go to this tribe and murder them all and take their women and kill their babies and all that stuff? And that happens a lot in Deuteronomy and other places. Yeah. Like, so you're saying you fuck up a lot. And
right.
You have no control over your creation.
That sounds
that
like that sounds more like a man than a god.
Right. And again, oh, okay. So going back to that thing now, another part of that whole idea of the, you know, the gods of high places, the whole, you know, most high and all that stuff,
yeah, the
and
most
going
high.
Up high to talk to their gods.
Right.
If the technology was out in the open back then of all these people who had survived long, long cataclysms, there doesn't need to be anything supernatural. There doesn't need to be anything otherworldly about them. They're just people that have high advanced technology, and they went up on high so that they would be seen. And that these very human people who dressed alike, so how did you know the difference between one or the other, would grant you something with their magical godly powers because they had all this high tech. And then you go back to the, well, kind of a pedophile, Arthur C. Clarke's thing of mm-hmm. saying anything of, you know, high technology would appear magic.
Yeah. There you go, folks. There's a lot to consume here in this conversation for those who have been following along. A lot of traditional religious folks, I'm sure, will not like this talk either. They don't like that kind of
weird,
talk,
right?
I'm sure. It is, but I mean, they need to hear it.
I just think it's odd that, you know, if you're being deceived, what is it
like
that you're being
that
loyal
kind
to
of
and protecting?
Talk.
Sorry, I didn't interrupt you there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said if you're being deceived, what is the, why would you be protective and resistant of, you know what I mean? Like, it's, what are you protecting?
Right.
If there's portions of it that are made by man that have been misleading to you, translations, changing or modernizing of certain things that don't mean the same, or using a modern concept of culture and to try to imprint that on the past when it doesn't work like that, different value systems, everything else, why wouldn't you want to know all the anomalies? Why wouldn't you want to know that the Rosicrucians edited the King James Version? Why wouldn't you want to know all these other things that may indicate that there's more to the story? Especially if your loyalty is to God, why wouldn't you want to know who he is versus what somebody tells you he is?
Yeah.
So why would that fuck people up who are religious?
Well, they
think they would want to know.
Well, they listened and they were indoctrinated by their parents and those that ran the show. But all the things that we describe here today doesn't sound much like a deity to me. Someone who's described as being omnipotent.
Omniscient.
I mean, it doesn't sound like that to me.
No. I'm not saying that there aren't portions of the old and the new that do kind of point to a benevolent creator, but there's such a dualistic nature of all these personalities that it makes you wonder if they're just lazy transcribers who assign the same name to multiple beings, characters, Elohim, which is plural. Who the hell knows?
Yeah, we don't know. And that's the problem. We don't know. And we probably won't know where we go when we die either. And that's what also drives me crazy. Is there an afterlife? Is there not? I mean, I certainly would hope so.
And when you have a sick, like I have right now, my grandfather's not doing well. He's going to be doing well because I'm going to will it to damn happen. But he lost his daughter, my aunt,
yeah,
a long, long time ago to leukemia, mother of three, very young. I'm older than my aunt ever got to be. To think it's okay to give up because you're going to be reunited with your daughter. How the fuck do you know that?
Yeah.
How do you know that? I want more than just faith. I want a fucking guarantee. Write it goddamn down. Because who knows? Who knows if that's true or not?
That's why you have to sort of live life like it's going to be your last day here at all times. That's the best
party,
way. Oh, yeah.
Right?
I'm not saying a party. I'm just saying be the best version of you every single day and, you know, try to give a bit more effort.
Appreciate everybody in your life.
Yeah, that
day.
Too. That's probably the best thing you can do, especially if this just ends up being some sort of simulation in the end.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, that's why I don't ever get into the whole stupid flat earth. Well, not saying that flat earth ideas are stupid. I'm just saying the whole argument is stupid. Because for the same people who say something about it's this shape or it's flat, also typically don't have a problem considering that it might be a holographic universe, magnetism, right? Magnetism
right.
Is basically giving things volume. So if it's a fucking hologram, what the fuck different shape is it? Doesn't mean it's a realm at that point.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what form it takes because all it has to do is trick you.
That's what I think. Does it really matter, though? But evidently, it matters to a lot of people out there.
Because of the math and the this and that. Where does the math come from?
Right.
This realm, right? So it's gonna work out because it's from this realm. it's gonna be the math of the fabric of the universe, regardless. So it's gonna seem like it makes sense, regardless if it does or not.
Right. And another thing I was gonna quickly ask you here was the Garden of Eden and that lovely story.
Psilocybin.
You know, I like talking to Robert Stanley about this all the time because I like to play devil's advocate all the time when he starts talking about it. I think it's funny. He gets a good laugh, but I always tell him, you know, what was the big deal? I mean, what was the problem with the serpent giving us knowledge? I mean, that's why we're having this conversation, Robert. So why would that be such a big deal? I think maybe the devil got a bad rap, I think, at times. I mean, did he ever kill anyone that we know of in the Bible? No. Has God killed a lot of people in the Bible? Yeah, a whole lot.
That's why I think it's the demiurge doing that. And the idea of that being a whole bad system of us knowing the idea, you know, if you know good from evil, you know when you're being mistreated. And you know who's mistreating you at that point. So if the demiurge is trying to control you, but they're treating you like shit, and then you find out something different, it could turn his control upside down. So, you know?
It's a fun story. I love it, personally. I think it's great. I like all arguments for and against it, pro and con of this and that. I think it's a great sort of, I was gonna say it's a great exercise, but I guess you could look at it that way.
So, and so... There's still room for God and the creator and a benevolent being and the all-father and all that stuff and a demiurge. Because a demiurge could be the manipulator, confusing, controlling, and setting up religions and all other types of forms of government and stuff like that to keep the control.
Right.
And to keep us here.
And if we go that way, Daniel, if we continue down this path, then you have to obviously admit to yourself and to everyone else as we know all the principles of God and why he is God and all the why he's important and how he's all-knowing and he did all this, then that would mean God also created evil and all the bad things that happen.
Right, and I think that's where you get into this idea of the Sophia and the Logos kind of coming together to help the Demiurge out because the All-Father granted him a place to make his own because he was kind of like an anomaly of Sophia's creative power.
There you go.
If we get into the story or whatever. So he kind of like granted the mag. It's like, we don't know if it means aeons. We don't know if it means actual days. It could be you were given, you know, 26,000 years times, or 2,600 years times seven to make your world. But when you did it, you couldn't animate it. So the logos had to come in and all this other stuff. Then you get that story of breathing life into Adam and all this stuff is allegedly coming from the logos. So they helped, but now he wants to keep it all for himself, possibly. Who the hell knows? Who the hell knows if there's anything true about this? But it's interesting to think about, because that still doesn't mean that nobody's saying that God, or, you know, the All Father or whatever they call it in early Christianity, is the bad guy. It was more like a kind gesture to allow the Demiurge to have his own hangout.
Yeah.
And he's abusing his privilege.
Pretty much, yes. It's pretty wild, man.
Very strange.
I it's a very interesting subject, and you know, we can go all the way around. Well, anyone can with these subjects and come to all kinds of different conclusions. But yeah,
how many times have you heard a Christian say, or they read it from, say, "My God is a jealous God"? Like, well, then how what? What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, I hear that as well. Well, I haven't heard that in a while, but I have heard that before. My God is a jealous God, and you scratch your head and think, why would God be jealous?
Right. What does he not have that he needs to feel like he's... Because that's usually a feeling of insecurity, which can be pretty dangerous if you have the powers of a God.
It is.
Yeah. You know, like a flood. Hey, let's kill everybody and start over, because I'm going to throw a tantrum.
That's right. And Daniel, you know, we've been talking for a while now, and I know we're coming close to an end here. So I feel like, you know, we could talk more about this, but I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the new disease that's on our, that maybe it's on its way. Another one of these Chinese experiments that may or may not be released, I should say. Disease X, as it's famously known right now. Your thoughts and opinions on this disease that has been killing these rats in high percentages, 100%, rather fact.
I don't think it's any small point that I don't think it's coincidental, or it's just whatever, that there was back in the day Club X, or an X club, that had to do with Darwinianism and had to do with the eugenicists of that era. And then we have people like Tesla boy, Elon Musk. Every other company that he's involved in has an X in it. Even PayPal, ooh, before Peter Thiel took it, had an X in it. You know, it was called X.com, I think, before Peter Thiel and the other guys got involved in PayPal. And now we have Twitter being called X.
X
marks a spot. X is the symbol of poison. X is where, you know, all kinds, you know, you're dead. Two X's over your eyes in a cartoon.
That's right.
X is all that. X is the mark of the beast, according to Aleister Crowley. You know, the X with a circle around it, like the X-Men. All this stuff. Russell Brand used to have that show, Brand X. It was a circle with an X with a circle.
Right.
And then it's like, what are we? They're rubbing it in our faces, the symbolism. And to call it Disease X means like, this is going to be the big one. It's not Disease 10. You know what I mean? And if you look at the iPhone X, if you just spell it backwards, it's Phoenix. Kind of interesting, because of the Phoenix rising from the ashes.
Right.
But anyhow, it's bullshit, because we know that, at least I think we know that the virus theory, I'm not able to say this on here. Damn it. Never mind.
You mean on where?
Well, you're going to be on YouTube, right?
No, I have a, since we got that video removed, I can't upload or do a live show for about a week.
Oh,
but this will be on the podcast, which actually draws more numbers than those on than the shows on YouTube, actually.
Oh, okay, good.
So it's all good.
You okay with me saying what I'm about to say then?
Yeah,
so
you can say whatever you want here.
I don't want to limit what you can do with this video or whatever.
Oh, no, we're limitless here.
All right, cool. So Bechamp, Will Raymond Rife indirectly, but Bechamp directly, they dispelled germ theory a long time ago. They had equipment. They had looking glasses, I believe he said, or looking apparatus, Bechamp did. So he could actually study living material at the magnification of what they use electron microscopes for now. And you have to kill the tissue, radiate it, put chemicals in it, and all this other stuff, mix it all up in order for you to be able to see it on electron microscope. You didn't have to do that on his. So you could tell what things were what. And living tissue, surprise, surprise, operates differently than dead tissue that's been poisoned. And if it's like putting your hand in a blender, I think I heard an analogy once, putting your hand in the blender and then taking a sample of it and putting on a slide to try to understand how it functions, you know? So that's what we're basing this whole germ theory on, because it's a great control mechanism to get people to do stupid things like rush to take the actual poison.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why it doesn't matter what the con is. It's always the same con. They're poisoning your food, water, and air. They're putting pesticides on everything. They're spraying you from above. Your drinking water is probably contaminated with some kind of horrible stuff. There's microplastics everywhere. Anything that can make you sick. Radiation in every freaking town has a shit ton of radio towers. RF frequencies can cause flu-like symptoms. So whatever the hell they're giving to the rats, we're not there to see what they're actually doing. It could just be poisoning them.
Yeah.
You know, but here's the scam. Here's the thing that we're, and then people say, why would they spend X amount of money to blah, blah, blah? And why would they give the shot away for free and blah, blah, blah? Because they print it. It doesn't mean shit to them. It only matters to the profane idiots like us that we think in terms of money. Their terms are human suffering. And if there is a cataclysm coming that they're aware of, they don't want a bunch of people rushing into their tunnels. So it's better to kill us off ahead of time.
Well, I can disagree with that.
To thin the herd, right?
Thin the herd, yeah. A term we heard as well. Thinning of the herd. We heard a lot of that back in 2020.
Herd immunity.
And that brings me to my next point here before I cut you loose, my friend.
Everything's inverted.
I know that too. Everything's very much inverted and backwards in the year 2024. And, you know, we're talking about all this stuff going on right now. And that's one criticism that Trump is currently facing. I know there's many criticisms he faces, but one of the main ones is because of his involvement with Operation Warp Speed.
Yes.
And he likes to call himself the godfather of the vaccine.
I've made this statement many a times myself. What the hell is that all about? Okay, so apparently WikiLeaks, I don't know who controls it, if it's still Julian Assange. I don't know where the hell Julian Assange is.
I'm not even sure who controls it now.
Huh?
I said I'm not even sure who controls that now.
Right. Yeah. Besides some three-letter agency, probably.
Some Fed, yeah.
So, can I read something to you real quick?
Yeah,
and then kind of give my assessment of it?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So, this to me sounds like QAnon nonsense, as I like to call it. Because,
I like that.
You know, sit on your hands. Let somebody else take care of your problems. Everything's going to be fine. Don't worry about the lockdowns. Don't worry about... They said this 2 years ago, 4 years ago. Don't worry about martial law. It's all Trump. It's all the white hats. Just let yourself get completely devastated by government things and then just assume that it's for your benefit and everything will be fine. Don't fight back, though. So this says, Jack Anthony sent this to me. It says, emergency transmission system warning. President Trump is going to tweet. So first of all, this is going out to the public. So keep that in mind when they tell you their secret plan about what they're going to do, right? President Trump is going to tweet, my fellow citizens, a storm is brewing. Oh, God, here we go. A storm's coming. More QAnon shit, right? And that will unleash global martial law on us. Apparently, that's supposed to be a positive thing. GSERA and NESERA will be activated. The military will remove cabal, a nice another term that the QAnoners will know. Cabal-controlled governments worldwide and simultaneously arrest 500,000 sealed indictments worldwide. I understand what they're trying to say there, but they didn't say it right. They're going to arrest people.
I feel like they've been saying. I feel like they've been saying that for many, many moons now.
Yeah. It's the same shit because they got to ramp it up because Trump's coming back, right? They got to enter into the man on the white horse. What is it? Behold the pale horse, right?
Behold the pale horse.
So, seven trumpets, AKA EBS text messages alerting him to tune in his TV, radio, or phone will be coming to his phone. Every world military throughout the United States military shut down all media, internet, phone. So now they're telling you that they're going to shut down our communications.
Right.
Right. But it's a good thing.
Oh, it's a good thing.
They're prepping the people that would actually resist and fight and grab arms and become a militia and defend it. It's okay. Everything's fine. It's the good guys. It says emergency services will still work. Internet and ATMs will not work. ATMs will not work during that time, and phones will only work. Let me just drop up to the next one. Emergency phones will only work if you call 911. This global martial law includes 10 days of communications darkness, emergency broadcast systems operating around the world, and an 8-hour documentary on fraud, corruption, pedophilia, arrests,
It's like Passover all over.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're gonna I'm gonna mark a red X on my door.
Right, and everything will be fine. Pay no attention. Let's see. Arrests and courts around the world to be broadcast 3 times a day, 24 hours a day, to prime the public. Oh, it's okay, because the propaganda in front of your face is telling you just to stay at home. Don't make it hard for us to catch you, right? Elite 365 days a year. Okay, so they're gonna run that 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, but apparently this is only supposed to last for 10 days. So how does that work? After 10 days of communication, darkness will be of the darkness, we connect to a new, now here's where it gets really messed up. Where'd it go? Let me see if I can get it. We're gonna connect to a new system, everybody. A new network. That sounds like a digital currency to me, possibly, or a new world order. I don't know. As much as the internet, these are bad sentences that they're writing. The old system of government, education, finance, health, trade, and commerce will be dismantled and replaced. Exactly what they were telling us what they're going to do with the CBDC. So regardless if this is, somebody said this is just more QAnon shit. Agreed. Agreed. But, and thank you, Captain Obvious, for the person who said that. But what are they actually telling you? If this actually, if something like this starts to go down, or it starts to look like something like this to go down, all the people who would actually stand up and fight are going to be neutralized just like they were during the lockdowns. They're going to sit on their hands and wait for their savior, who's going to come in an orange man form probably. And it's going to stop people from actually having that one opportunity they have to resist. And then we're all fucked. Because then we'll be in a digital prison thanks to Switch and all those other jacked up AI nonsense controlling our worlds and our countries and the defense systems and everything that's shooting at you from freaking phones and or what do you call it, the telephone poles and all that crap. Monitoring you all day, active denial systems, all the stupid F5G around your neighborhood. If they don't want you out of the house, crank that shit up. You'll run right back inside.
Oh, yes.
So I'm just saying this is kind of messed up, because if this does happen and they're planning this and they're telling you this is going to happen, if it's all 100% BS, great, awesome. But if this is just trying to dismantle and disarm the people who would actually put up a resistance, this is pretty messed up. That's what I would concern myself with mostly, is that the people who'd be duped by that not doing anything, and you just taking out the biggest issue that they would have, which is any resistance.
Right. I mean, the thing is, you definitely don't want to end up in another Waco-like situation at your home. And some folks, they feel like they could take on the government or law enforcement, and I think, are you retarded?
That one helicopter would take.
That's all it takes to get you out of there.
Yeah.
Actually, one drone could get you out of there.
Yeah, they need to man it, right? Yeah, and what good is that if all you're doing is breaking their toys? You're not stopping them.
No.
You're not taking their numbers down if you're just breaking their innumerable amount of toys.
I kind of feel like we've already been compromised, my friend. I sort of feel like everything's kind of, I was going to say, I think we're pretty much doomed, Daniel.
I think you might be right.
I think we've already been sold out, my friend. I think this country and those who ran it have sold out a long time ago. They sold us down the river, Daniel, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and like, if you want to go back to the whole bankruptcy of this country, like, we haven't had a government. We just had the Jesuit theater playing in for us. And we can go pick our candidate, and now, hey, look for America.
Yeah, that's another thing I have trouble with as well. The fact that we vote is very troubling to me. I feel like voting, it's bullshit, in other words.
Yes.
I'm glad you came to that conclusion so quickly. I just don't buy it, my friend. I never believed in it.
It's like, you know, they say in that movie Caddyshack, be the ball, Danny.
Be the ball. Yeah, yeah. Great movie.
Yeah, right. Because the two ping pong paddles are, you know, you have your lefts and your rights, and you're the ball getting smacked back and forth over the net.
Yeah, right? good point.
It's like having two parents that are separated, right? One smacks you over to their side of the court, and then smacks them back over, and it's like, yeah, I'm just a kid in between, bouncing my fucking head off.
Or another good analogy would be good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, there you go.
It's the same
thing. You know, they're gonna ensnare you either on this side, that side, and hey, every once in a while, they give you a third option. Now they got everybody.
That's right. You know, I wish a third party would actually have the same sort of backing that the left and right, the major left and right actually has. That would be fun if we had a bit of an outsider in there. You know, someone that you know doesn't, you know, someone that doesn't actually belong in there. Someone that's pretty wild. not like how they try to make Trump seem, where right. they're like, oh, no, he's on the outside. He's not a politician. You know, anytime I heard that, I'm like, you really don't know how the world works, do you? Anytime
you
I hear someone say
political
that.
Guy, Vivek.
I thought he was fun. I thought he was fun.
Yeah, he made his money in pharmaceuticals as well.
I mean, I liked him because he was a little, you know, he's a little, well, because he's Indian.
People are supposed to say all the right things because they're supposed to get people in that thought process and then steer them into the ground later once they're already.
I was hoping we'd get like a young Indian in there, but then I also quickly remembered, no, he's also been compromised. So he would definitely not be a good president, in my opinion, actually. Once I started thinking about it again, I'm like, wait a minute. Let me go back to, let me get back down to earth for a second here and be rational about this. I thought he is no better than the rest of them.
Have you heard of the murmurs? I don't know if it's coming from the people or if it's been stated like officially that the orange man might consider him as a running mate.
I heard that, but then I thought, well, is that actually going to happen though?
Right.
Probably not.
And you know, it's funny. I think I heard the same thing about, and I had said this about, I don't know, it was like a month and a half ago to actually Jack Anthony, the guy who sent me that.
Yeah.
That I couldn't think of his name at first. Tucker Penis Between Your Legs. Oh, Tucker Carlson. Right. That he might be pulled up as a. As the next, the running mate. I don't know if that's true, but I feel like they're pushing him into a more politically, at least, relevant position. And that's, I think I've heard murmurs since then that actually was a consideration that Tucker Penis Between His Legs is a.
That is crazy if that would happen. Whew. Right. I don't even want to think about that. That is something
else. Guest
buddies
with what's his name? Hunter?
With Hunter Biden. Yeah. That's why I think it's all BS. You know, these people just go where the money is. And I understand that. But at some point, you have to have some integrity and be honest about your doings behind the scenes. But then again, all anchors out there, they've already sold their souls. You know, they all are. They're all pay for play, just like Hillary. You know, they're
Rupert
all pay for play.
Is owning the station that you're, you know, I mean, he's counsel on foreign relations. Can you get any more dirty than that?
Yeah, you know, that guy's another piece of work. And by the way, I do have a clip here of Bill Cooper, which I forgot to play for you when we're talking about aliens. And this is what the man had to say.
Can I just say this real quick?
Yeah,
as a disclaimer, or not a disclaimer, but to put it in perspective. He said, it, even when in his book, if this, you know, it's possible that this is true, or it's possible that I was meant to see this, so that I would one day talk about it and it would be a deception. And then he later, since after that, you know, after going to these UFO conferences and stuff like that, he said that this is all bullshit. It's all CIA. It's all this and that. Cause he actually met the people and they thought he was one of them. And then, you know, he was like, yeah, this is all nonsense. This is all garbage. So whatever he might have said at one point, he totally throughout the whole entire time of his radio broadcast, which was 9 years of him talking every night, said that it was a great deception. He called them ufologists and stuff like that too. So I just want to put that out there.
Right. Here we go.
Papers I found on my desk was a document entitled Operation Majority. And it was not the entire paperwork involving this operation, but was merely a synopsis of the operation and projects contained under it. One of these projects was called Project Red Light. The purpose, according to this document, was to back engineer captured extraterrestrial technology for adaptation into the United States space program. Now, I have since come to believe that the extraterrestrial portion of all of this is nonsense, but that the technology is real. I believe that many of us were shown these documents over the years so that later we would talk about it. I mean, how can you keep the existence of extraterrestrials, if they were real, a secret? And how could anyone keep quiet knowing that they had seen documentation, official government documents labeled top secret, that expressed that these extraterrestrials were real and had visited this earth? I wanted to know just how true all of this was, and I began a program of research to find out if extraterrestrials were real. The first thing I did was collect every bit of documentation that I could find, both from the Freedom of Information Act, from the receipt search of others, from books that had been printed on the subject of UFOs, and of course through my network of friends in the intelligence community. What I discovered was amazing. What I discovered, ladies and gentlemen, is that there has been a plan in existence since about 1917, and probably before that, to create an artificial extraterrestrial threat to this Earth in order to create a one-world totalitarian socialist government. One of the first documents that I found in my search was this one. The Imperial Japanese Mission 1917, a record of the reception throughout the United States of the special mission headed by Viscount Ishii. And when the Imperial Japanese Mission was in New York City, they had a dinner and some pretty famous people spoke at this dinner. One of them was John Dewey. John Dewey is the father of our failing, disastrous public education system. Here's what he said. Listen very carefully. John Dewey, professor of philosophy in Columbia University, who was the next speaker, was listened to with great intentness. He said, quote, "Someone remarked that the best way to unite all the nations on this globe would be an attack from some other planet."
And it cuts off right there.
Very awesome. Yeah, and not knowing what clip that was going to be, I apologize for that.
No
felt
worries.
The need to correct, you know, the record, only because
he didn't change
his mind on it. So.
Well, yes, this was just about, you know, what he talked about here with the terms of a fake alien invasion, which is something we've been hearing about for a long time already, and that's only been reamped again because of what's been going on in the news, and thanks to, you know, Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp being two main components of all this, what's been going on, which is very odd in my opinion. And the fact that TMZ also jumping on the bandwagon and putting out all those documentaries, the series rather.
Who was the last person? I kind of said, made a noise when my throat and didn't catch it.
Oh, George Knapp.
Oh, George Knapp. That was the last. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. But it's funny because a long time ago, Bill Cooper actually put out two documentaries that he had created called the Red Light, Project Red Light 1 and 2. And he was at Area 51, just interviewing people who lived in the area, and he would take people out there to just kind of like hang out and see what they could see. You can't get too close because it was all bases were, you know, the whole thing was kind of like a patrolled or whatever, so you can only get so close. But they would stay there overnight and watch stuff and, you know, check out the lights and see how they moved and things like that. Back then they had, you know, what was it, VHS cameras. So I mean, nothing was crystal clear. It's about like watching dots going back and forth on the screen.
Right.
But it was kind of tough to make out what was what. And in perspective too, like if you're not seeing the horizon line and you're just looking straight up in the sky, like you can't really see what's happening because there's no frame of reference for it. But it was interesting because he never at that point either said anything except that this is government operation. You know, this is where they do all this stuff, and this is where they develop all this stuff.
I feel he's right. And yeah, that was a very, very early documentary, probably one of the very first documentaries about Area 51, also known as Dreamland, which is pretty awesome. I wish it was just called Dreamland these days, but only the old timers know about that. But yeah, Project Red Light, definitely a great documentary. I believe I've seen that one a number of years ago myself, and that was pretty amazing at the time. I remember seeing that when I was really young, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got into this very young, by the way.
Oh, they had the stores, too. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I found it on YouTube. I found the part two on the YouTube, and I was able to trace back to the first one. They're degraded. I mean, they're old videos, but they're still interesting to watch for sure.
I think it's great, and I love all the subject matter, even though I know probably most of it might be bullshit for the majority of it. But I definitely don't rule out all the sightings that all these sailors saw back in the day.
Right,
and then, these USOs. Yeah, again,
it makes you have to wonder if it's coming out of the water and stuff.
That's
like that.
Right.
How are we to say that they don't belong here? That they're not from do they have to be from somewhere else, or do they just have to have high technology and be here?
And be here already, deep into the core of the earth, as they say. But my friend, Daniel, I do want to thank you tremendously for being a part of the program, my friend. Definitely.
I don't know how you feel about it, but I had a really good time.
I had a great time. I mean, I always have a good time when you're here, even though we've only done, you know, this is our second show. But, you know, you did a fantastic job. And again, here tonight, I enjoyed our conversation immensely, my friend. And again, we'll do it again on the other side, my friend. Definitely plug away if you'd like.
Oh, on Barnes & Noble, there's a 6x9, 416-page version of Priestcraft Beyond Babylon. It's not going to have color photos, but it's the cheapest of the versions. The other one is going to be on Amazon, and you can get it in hardcover, paperback, and Kindle. You can also get it on Nook over on Barnes & Noble, but that's an 8.5x11. So it's a full sheet size of paper, and it's 14 fonts. So if you have a hard time reading, the reason why I made two different sizes so that people who have a hard time reading can see it better. And that's going to be in color. Same thing if you get the hardcover, it's glossy and in color. So there you have it. And then also Kindle is probably the cheapest version because it's electronic. Have at it.
I would strongly recommend the big book. Ladies and gentlemen, it makes for a great piece on the coffee table as well. And of course, the font is big enough to read. Not like all the modern day books now where the font is like a size 5 font.
And if I may be so bold, because I put a lot of work into this, and I was one of the other objectives was to have something that anybody could pick up, including homeschool parents, if they wanted to get an idea for their children and for themselves. But what they're saying that, you know, what's going on that they're not ever telling you about. I think this would work as a textbook, as an addition, not as a replacement, but as an additional study guide or something like that for children that they would never, ever get in even charter school.
Right.
So,
absolutely. Very nice, my friend. We will do it on the other side.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much again. I appreciate it. And one of these days, we're going to track down Mike.
Absolutely. And there he goes, boys and girls. That was Mr. Daniel Christos. Go check out his show, Ball Busters, on Rumble and wherever you listen to podcasts. Just a quick reminder, if you go to michaeldeacon.com, you can find our merchandise. Those of you listening now, you should know where to go. And we have a new line of clothing coming out just for you. The 2024 line is underway. So far, there's only one shirt, but soon there will be many. I want to thank all of you out there for supporting the program. Special thanks to all of you on Patreon and those who listen to the live edition of the program. And of course, those who listen to the podcast version of this program. Much love and respect to all of you. And with that said, the world is a mysterious place, and life itself is a mystery. Until next time, mahalo.